Chapter 9, The Consumption Function. Page 71. Introduction. One of the important tools of the Keynesian economics is the consumption function. This chapter deals with the consumption function, its technical attributes, its importance, and its subjective and objective determinants, along with Keynes' psychological law of consumption. Meaning of consumption function. The consumption function, or propensity to consume, refers to income-consumption relationship. It is a functional relationship between two aggregates, that is, total consumption and gross national income. Note 1. K.K. Kurihara, Monetary Theory and Public Policy, page 152. Symbolically, the relationship is represented as capital C is equal to function of capital Y, where C is the consumption, Y is the income, and F is the functional relationship. Thus, the consumption function indicates a functional relationship between C and Y, where C is the dependent but Y is the independent variable. That is, C is determined by Y. This relationship is based on the ceteris paribus, that is, other things being equal assumption. As such, only income-consumption relationship is considered and all possible influences on consumption are held constant. In fact, the propensity to consume or consumption function is a schedule of various amounts of consumption expenditure corresponding to different levels of income. A hypothetical consumption schedule is given in Table 1. So in Table 1 we have income in crores rupees, which is capital Y, and consumption C, which is a function of Y. The entries are: for Y equal to 0, C is 20, Y equal to 60, C is 70, Y equal to 120, C is 120, Y equal to 180, C is 170, Y equal to 240, C is 220, Y equal to 300, C is 270, Y equal to 360, C is 220. Returning to the text, Table 1 shows that consumption is an increasing function of income because consumption expenditure increases with increase in income. Here it is shown that when income is zero during the Depression, people spend out of their past savings on consumption because they must eat in order to live. When income is generated in the economy to the extent of rupees 60 crores, it is not sufficient to meet the consumption expenditure of the community, so that the consumption expenditure of rupees 70 crores is still above the income amounting to rupees 60 crores. That is, rupees 10 crores is dissaved. When both consumption expenditure and income equal rupees 120 crores, it is the basic consumption level. After this, income is shown to increase by rupees 60 crores and consumption by rupees 50 crores. This implies a stable consumption function during the short run as assumed by Keynes. Page 72. Figure 1 illustrates the consumption function diagrammatically. In the diagram, income is measured horizontally and consumption is measured vertically. 45 degrees is the unity line where all levels, income and consumption, are equal. The C curve is a linear consumption function based on the assumption that consumption changes by the same amount, that is rupees 50 crores. Its upward slope to the right indicates that consumption is an increasing function of income. B is the break-even point where C is equal to Y, or OY1 is equal to OC1. When income increases to OY2, consumption also increases to OC2, but the increase in consumption is less than the increase in income. C1 C2 is less than Y1 Y2. The portion of income not consumed is saved, as shown by the vertical distance between 45 degrees line and the curve C, that is S1. Thus, the consumption function measures not only the amount spent on consumption but also the amount saved. This is because the propensity to save is merely the propensity not to consume. The 45 degrees line may therefore be regarded as a zero saving line, and the shape and position of the curve C indicates the division of income between consumption and saving. Properties or technical attributes of the consumption function. The consumption function has two technical attributes or properties. One, the average propensity to consume, and two, the marginal propensity to consume. 1. The average propensity to consume. The average propensity to consume may be defined as the ratio of consumption expenditure to any particular level of income. Note 2. K.K. Kurihara, Introduction to Keynesian Dynamics, page 32. It is found by dividing consumption expenditure by income, or APC is equal to C upon Y. It is expressed as the percentage or proportion of income consumed. The APC at various income levels is shown in column 3 of table 2. I will be reading the table 2 later as it is on the next page. The APC declines as income increases because the proportion of income spent on consumption decreases. But reverse is the case with APS, average propensity to save, which increases with increase in income. See column 4. Thus, the APC also tells us about the average propensity to save. APS is equal to 1 minus APC. Diagrammatically, the average propensity to consume is any one point on curve C. In figure 2, panel A, point R measures the APC of the curve C, which is OC1 upon OY1. The flattening of the C curve to the right shows declining APC. So in figure 2, we have two panels. In panel A, in both the curves, we have income on the x-axis and consumption on the y-axis. In panel A, we have a curve which is slightly, it's an increasing curve which flattens as we move towards the x-axis on the right. There's a point R on the curve corresponding to that y1 is the income and c1 is the consumption. There's a similar curve in panel B, but it is a bigger curve. So there is again R over here, corresponding points on the x and y axis are y1, c1. There is another point N which is higher than R on the curve. Corresponding to N, the points are y2 and c2. The difference between c1 and c2 is delta C. The difference between y1 and y2 is delta Y. And the point corresponding to C2, if extended, is point Q on NY2. Going back to the text. 2. The marginal propensity to consume. The marginal propensity to consume may be defined as the ratio of the change in consumption to the change in income, or as the rate of change in the average propensity to consume as income increases. Note 3, K.K. Kurihara, Monetary Theory and Public Policy, page 156. It can be found by dividing the change in consumption by a change in income, or MPC is equal to delta C upon delta Y. The MPC is constant at all levels of income as shown in column 5 of table 2. It is 0.83 or 83%, because the ratio of the change in consumption to change in income is delta C upon delta Y, which is equal to 50 upon 60. The marginal propensity to save can be derived from MPC by the formula 1 minus MPC. It is 0.17 in our diagram. See column 6. Diagrammatically, the marginal propensity to consume is measured by the gradient or slope of the C curve. This is shown by panel B by NQ upon RQ, where NQ is the change in the consumption, delta C, and RQ is the change in income, delta Y, or C1, C2 upon Y1, Y2. Significance of MPC. The MPC is the rate of change in the APC. When income increases, MPC falls, but more than the APC. Contrarywise, when income falls, the MPC rises and APC also rises, but at a slower rate than the former. Such changes are only possible during cyclical fluctuations, whereas in the short run there is a change in MPC and MPC is less than APC. Keynes is concerned primarily with MPC, for his analysis pertains to short run, while the APC is useful in long run analysis. The post-Keynesian economists have come to the conclusion that over the long run, APC and MPC are equal and approximate 0.9. In the Keynesian analysis, the MPC is given more prominence. Its value is assumed to be positive and less than unity, which means that when income increases, the whole of it is not spent on consumption. Page 73. On the contrary, when income falls, consumption expenditure does not decline in the same proportion and never becomes zero. I will read now the table 2. In table 2, rupees is in crores. There are 6 columns. First column is income, which is Y. Column 2 is consumption, which is C. Third column is APC, which is C upon Y. Column 4 is APS, which is equal to S upon Y, which is same as 1 minus APC. Column 5 is MPC, which is delta C upon delta Y. Column 6 is MPS, which is equal to delta S upon delta Y, which is 1 minus MPC. The entries are as follows. Y 120, C 120, APC is 120 upon 120, which is equal to 1 or 100%, APS is 0, MPC dash, MPS dash. Next, Y 180, C 170, APC is 170 upon 180, which is equal to 0.92 or 92%, APS is 0.08, MPC is 50 upon 60, which is 0.83, MPS is 0.17. For Y equal to 240, C equal to 220, APC is 240 upon 220, which is equal to 0.91 or 91%, APS is 0.09, MPC is 50 upon 60, which is 0.83, MPS is 0.17. For Y equal to 300, C equal to 270, APC is 270 upon 300, which is 0.90 or 90%, APS is 0.10, MPC is equal to 50 upon 60, which is 0.83, MPS is 0.17. And finally, Y equal to 360, C is equal to 320, APC is 320 upon 360, which is 0.88 or 88%. APS is 0.12. MPC is 50 upon 60, which is 0.83 or 83%. MPS is 0.17. Returning to the text, the Keynesian hypothesis that the marginal propensity to consume is positive but less than unity, such that 0 less than delta C upon delta Y less than 1, is of great analytical and practical significance. Besides telling us that consumption is an increasing function of income and it increases by less than the increment of income, this hypothesis helps in explaining A. the theoretical stability of general overproduction or underdevelopment equilibrium, and also B. the relative stability of a highly developed industrial economy. For it is implied that the gap between income and consumption at all high levels of income is too wide to be easily filled by investment, with the possible consequence that the economy may fluctuate around an underemployment equilibrium. Note 4. K.K. Kurihara, Introduction to Keynesian Dynamics, page 36. Thus, the economic significance of the MPC lies in filling the gap between income and consumption through planned investment to maintain the desired level of income. Further, its importance lies in the multiplier theory. The higher the MPC, the higher the multiplier, and vice versa. The MPC is low in the case of rich people and high in the case of the poor. This accounts for high MPC in underdeveloped countries and low in advanced countries. Keynes' psychological law of consumption. Keynes propounded the fundamental psychological law of consumption, which forms the basis of consumption function. He wrote, "The fundamental psychological law upon which we are entitled to depend with great confidence, both a priori from our knowledge of human nature and from the detailed facts of experience, is that men are disposed as a rule and on the average to increase their consumption as their income increases, but not by as much as they increase in their income. The law implies that there is a tendency on the part of the people to spend on consumption less than the full increment of income." Page 74. Propositions of the law. This law has three related propositions. 1. When income increases, consumption expenditure also increases, but by a smaller amount. The reason is that as income increases, our wants are satisfied side by side, so that the need to spend more on consumer goods diminishes. It does not mean that the consumption expenditure falls with the increase in income. In fact, the consumption expenditure increases with increase in income, but less than proportionately. 2. The increased income will be divided in some proportion between consumption expenditure and saving. This follows from the above proposition because when the whole of increased income is not spent on consumption, the remaining is saved. In this way, consumption and saving move together. 3. Increase in income always leads to an increase in both consumption and saving. This means that increased income is unlikely to lead either to fall in consumption or saving than before. This is based on the above propositions because as income increases, consumption also increases, but by a smaller amount than before, which leads to an increase in saving. Thus, with increased income, both consumption and saving increase. The three propositions of the law can be explained with the help of the following Table 3. So we have Table 3, in which rupees is in crores. There are three columns. The first column is income Y, second column is consumption C, the third column is savings S, which is equal to Y minus C. The entries are as follows. For Y equal to 0, consumption equal to 20, savings is minus 20. Y equal to 60, C is 70, S is minus 10. Y equal to 120, C equal to 120, S is equal to 0. Y equal to 180, C is 170, S is equal to 10. For Y equal to 240, C equal to 220, S is equal to 20. For Y equal to 300, C equal to 270, S is equal to 30. Y equal to 360, C is equal to 320, S is equal to 40. Returning back to the text. Proposition 1. Income increases by rupees 60 crores and the increase in consumption is by rupees 50 crores. The consumption expenditure is, however, increasing with increase in income, that is rupees 170, 220, 270 and 320 crores against rupees 180, 240, 300 and 360 crores respectively. Proposition 2. The increased income of rupees 60 crores in each case is divided into some proportion between consumption and savings, that is rupees 50 crores and rupees 10 crores. Proposition 3. As income increases from 120 to 180 to 240, 300 and 360 crores, consumption also increases from rupees 120 to 170, 220, 270, 320 crores, along with increase in the savings from rupees 0 to 10, 20, 30 and 40 crores respectively. With increase in income, neither consumption nor saving have fallen. Diagrammatically, the three propositions are explained in figure 3. So in figure 3, income is measured horizontally and consumption and saving are measured on the vertical axis. C is the composition function curve and 45 degrees line represents income. Proposition 1. Let me first briefly explain the figure. So as I said, income is on the x-axis and consumption and savings C and S are on the y-axis. There is the consumption curve C, which starts at certain point on the y-axis, and it is an increasing curve which straight line as we move towards the right of the x-axis. Then there is a straight line at 45 degrees angle. Corresponding to y0 is point B on C. Corresponding to y1 on the income axis is A1. Corresponding to y2 is point A2. This is on the 45 degrees angle. And on C, corresponding to y1 is C1 and corresponding to y2 is C2. The intersection between these two lines is B, which corresponds to y0. So going back to the text. When income increases from OY0 to OY1, consumption also increases from BY0 to C1Y1, but the increase in consumption is less than the increase in volume. That is, C1Y1 is less than A1Y1 or OY1 by A1C1. Proposition 2. When income increases to OY1 and OY2, it is divided in some proportion between consumption C1Y1 and C2Y2 and saving A1C1 and A2C2 respectively. Proposition 3. Increases in income to OY1 and OY2 lead to increased consumption C2Y2 greater than C1Y1 and increased saving A2C2 is greater than A1C1 than before. It is clear from the widening area below the C curve and the saving gap between 45 degrees line and C curve. Page 75. Its assumptions. Keynes' law is based on the following assumptions. 1. It assumes a constant psychological and institutional complex. This law is based on the assumption that the psychological and institutional complexes influencing consumption expenditure remain constant. Such complexes are income distribution, tastes, habits, social customs, price movements, population growth, etc. In the short run, they do not change and consumption depends on income alone. The constancy of these complexes is the fundamental cause of the stable consumption function. 2. It assumes the existence of normal conditions. The law holds good under normal conditions. If, however, the economy is faced with abnormal and extraordinary circumstances like war, revolution, or hyperinflation, the law will not operate. People may spend the whole of increased income on consumption. 3. It assumes the existence of a laissez-faire capitalist economy. The law operates in a rich capitalist economy where there is no government intervention. People should be free to spend increased income. In the case of regulation of private enterprise and consumption expenditures by the state, the law breaks down. Thus, the law is inoperative in socialist or state-controlled and regulated economies. Professor Kurihara opines that Keynes' law, based on these assumptions, may be regarded as a rough approximation to the actual macro behavior of free consumers in the normal short period. Note 6. K.K. Kurihara, Monetary Theory and Public Policy, page 160. Implications of Keynes' law or importance of the consumption function. Keynes' psychological law has important implications which in fact point towards the importance of the consumption function, because the latter is based on the former. Note 7. While dealing with the importance of the consumption function, the students are advised to delete word psychological law and instead write the word consumption function. The following are its implications. 1. Invalidates Say's law. Say's law states that supply creates its own demand. Therefore, there cannot be general overproduction or general unemployment. Keynes' psychological law invalidates Say's law because as income increases, consumption also increases, but by a smaller amount. In other words, all that is produced, that is income, is not taken off the market, that is spent, as income increases. Thus, supply fails to create its own demand. Rather, it exceeds demand and leads to general overproduction and glut of commodities in the market. As a result, producers stop production and there is a mass unemployment. 2. Need for state intervention. As a corollary to the above, the psychological law highlights the need for state intervention. Say's law is based on the existence of laissez-faire policy, and its refutation implies that the economic system is not self-adjusting. So when consumption does not increase by the full increment of income, and consequently there is general overproduction and mass unemployment, the necessity of state intervention arises in the economy to avoid general overproduction and unemployment through public policy. 3. Crucial importance of investment. Keynes's psychological law stresses the vital point that people fail to spend on consumption the full increment of income. This tendency creates a gap between income and consumption, which can only be filled by either increased investment or consumption. If either of them fail to rise, output and employment will invariably fail. Since the consumption function is stable in the short run, the gap between income and consumption can only be filled by an increase in investment. Thus, the psychological law emphasizes the crucial role of investment in Keynes's theory. It is the inadequacy of investment which results in unemployment, and logically, the remedy to overcome unemployment is increase in investment. 4. Existence of underemployment equilibrium. Keynes's notion of underemployment equilibrium is also based on the psychological law of consumption. The point of effective demand, which determines the equilibrium level of employment, is not of full employment but of underemployment, because consumers do not spend the full increment of their income on consumption and there remains a deficiency in aggregate demand. Full employment equilibrium level can, however, be reached if the state increases investment to match the gap between income and consumption. 5. Declining tendency of the marginal efficiency of capital. The psychological law also points towards the tendency of declining marginal efficiency of capital in a laissez-faire economy. When income increases and consumption does not increase to the same extent, there is a fall in demand for consumer goods. This results in glut of commodities in the market. The producers will reduce production, which in turn bring a decline in the demand for capital goods and hence in the expected rate of profit and business expectations. It implies a decline in the marginal efficiency of capital. It is not possible to arrest this process of declining tendency of marginal efficiency of capital unless the propensity to consume rises. But such a possibility can exist only in the long run when the psychological law of consumption does not hold good. Page 76. 6. Danger of permanent oversaving or underinvestment gap. Keynes' psychological law points out that there is always a danger of an oversaving or underinvestment gap appearing in the capitalist economy, because as people become rich, the gap between the income and consumption widens. This long-run tendency of increasing saving and falling investment is characterized as secular stagnation. When people are rich, their propensity to consume is low and they save more. This implies low demand, which leads to decline in investment. Thus, the tendency is for secular stagnation in the economy. 7. Unique nature of income propagation. The fact that the entire increased income is not spent on consumption explains multiplier theory. The multiplier theory, or the process of income propagation, tells that when an initial injection of investment is made in the economy, it leads to smaller successive increments in income. This is due to the fact that people do not spend their full increment of income on consumption. In fact, the value of multiplier is derived from the marginal propensity to consume. That is, multiplier is equal to 1 minus 1 upon MPC. The higher the MPC, the higher the value of the multiplier, and vice versa. 8. Explanation of the turning points of business cycles. This law explains the turning point of a business cycle. Before the economy reaches the full employment level, the downturn starts because people fail to spend the full increment of their income on consumption. This leads to fall in demand, overproduction, unemployment, and decline in the marginal efficiency of capital. We have now two figures, that is panel A and panel B of figure 4. In both the figures, we have income on the y-axis and consumption on the x-axis. In panel A, we have again curve C and the 45 degrees straight line. These two intersect at point B. Corresponding to point B have y1 on x-axis and c1 on the y-axis. There is another point y2 which is greater than y1. Corresponding to y2 is c2 on the y-axis. The third point yf is greater than y2. In panel B, again we have the C curve and the 45 degrees line. They both intersect at B. Corresponding to B is y1 on the x-axis and c1 on the y-axis. There is another point y which is less than y1, and corresponding to y we have c2 on the y-axis. So c2 in this case will be less than c1. In panel A, c2 is greater than c1. Returning to the text. So figure 4 shows this downturn movement. When the income increases above the break-even point by y1, y2, consumption expenditure increases by a smaller amount, c1, c2. c1, c2 is less than y1, y2. Before the economy reaches full employment level, yf, the downturn will start because the gap between the 45 degrees line and the C curve continues to widen. Conversely, the upturn in the economy starts before it reaches the stage of complete depression, because when income falls, consumption also falls, but by less than the fall in income. People continue to buy consumer goods even when their income falls. So when the excess stock of commodities is exhausted in the community during a depression, the existence of consumer expenditure on goods leads to revival. This is best explained with the help of panel B, where below the break-even point B, the curve C is above the 45 degrees income line. The fact that the consumption function curve C is above the income line shows that revival will start before income falls to zero. This is because the fall in consumption C1, C2 is less than the fall in income Y1, Y. Determinants of the consumption function. Keynes mentioned two principal factors which influence the consumption function and determine its slope and position. They are 1. The subjective factors and 2. The objective factors. The subjective factors are endogenous or internal to the economic system. They include psychological characteristics of human nature, social practices and institutions and social arrangements. They are unlikely to undergo a material change over a short period of time, except in abnormal or revolutionary circumstances. They therefore determine the slope and position of the C curve, which is fairly stable in the short run. The objective factors are exogenous or external to the economic system. They may therefore undergo rapid changes and may cause marked shifts in the consumption function, that is the C curve. The subjective and objective factors are discussed below. Subjective factors. Keynes subjective factors basically underlie and determine the form, that is slope and position, of the consumption function. As already noted above, the subjective factors are the psychological characteristics of human nature, social practices and institutions, especially the behavior patterns of business concerns with respect to wage and dividend payments and retained earnings, and social arrangements affecting the distribution of income. There are two motives of subjective factors, individual and business. Page 77. 1. Individual motives. First, there are 8 motives which lead individuals to refrain from spending out of their incomes. They are 1. The desire to build reserves for unforeseen contingencies. 2. The desire to provide for anticipated future needs, for example, old age, sickness, etc. 3. The desire to enjoy an enlarged future income by way of interest and appreciation. 4. The desire to enjoy a gradually increasing expenditure in order to improve the standard of living. 5. The desire to enjoy a sense of independence and power to do things. 6. The desire to secure a mass de manoeuvre to carry out speculative or business projects. 7. The desire to bequeath a fortune. 8. The desire to satisfy a pure miserly instinct. 2. Business motives. The subjective factors are also influenced by the behavior of business corporations and governments. Keynes lists 4 motives for accumulation on their part. 1. Enterprise. The desire to do big things and to expand. 2. Liquidity. The desire to meet emergencies and difficulties successfully. 3. Income raise. The desire to secure large income and to show successful management. And 4. Financial prudence. The desire to provide adequate financial resources against depreciation and obsolescence and to discharge debt. These factors remain constant during the short run and keep the consumption function stable. Objective factors. The following objective factors are given by Keynes. 1. Changes in the wage level. If the wage rate changes, the consumption function shifts upwards. The workers, having a high propensity to consume, spend more out of their increased income, and this tends to shift the C curve upwards. If, however, the rise in the wage rate is accompanied by a more than proportionate rise in the price level, the real wage rate will fall and it will tend to shift the C curve downward. A cut in the wage rate will also reduce the consumption function of the community due to a fall in income, employment, and output. This will shift the curve downwards. 2. Windfall gains or losses. Unexpected changes in the stock market leading to gains or losses tend to shift the consumption function upward or downward. For instance, the phenomenal windfall gains due to the stock market boom in the American economy after 1925 led to a rise in the consumption function spending of stockholders by roughly in proportion to the increased income, and as a result, the consumption function shifted upwards. Similarly, unexpected losses in the stock market led to the downward shifting of the C curve. 3. Changes in the fiscal policy. Changes in fiscal policy in the form of taxation and public expenditure affect the consumption function. Heavy commodity taxation adversely affects the consumption function by reducing the disposable income of the people. This is what actually happened during the Second World War, when the consumption function shifted downward due to heavy indirect taxation, rationing, and price controls. On the other hand, the policy of progressive taxation along with that of public expenditure on welfare programs tends to shift the consumption function upward by altering the distribution of income. 4. Changes in expectations. Changes in future expectations also affect the propensity to consume. If a war is expected in the near future, people start hoarding durable and semi-durable commodities in anticipation of future scarcity and rising prices. As a result, people buy much in excess of their current needs, and the consumption function shifts upward. On the contrary, if it is expected that prices are likely to fall in the future, people would buy only those things which are very essential. It will lead to a fall in consumption demand and to a downward shift of the consumption function. 5. Changes in the rate of interest. Substantial changes in the market rate of interest may influence the consumption function indirectly. There are several ways in which the rate of interest may affect the consumption function. A rise in rate of interest will lead to a fall in the price of bonds, thereby tending to discourage the propensity to consume of the bondholders. It may also have the effect of substituting one type of assets for another. People may be encouraged to save rather than invest in bonds. In case they are buying durable consumer goods like refrigerators, scooters, etc. on higher purchase system, they will tend to postpone their purchases when the rate of interest rises. They will have to pay more in installments, and thus their consumption function will shift downwards. Keynes wrote, "Over a long period, substantial changes in the rate of interest probably tend to modify social habits considerably." Besides these five factors, Keynes also listed changes in accounting practice with respect to depreciation. This factor has been rejected by Hansen, who opines that it is not a factor which can be thought to change violently in the short run, and it was a mistake for Keynes to include it here. However, we add some of the other objective factors listed by Keynes' followers. Page 78. 6. Financial policies of corporations. Financial policies of corporations with regard to income retention, dividend payments, and reinvestments tend to affect the consumption function in several ways. If corporations keep money in the form of reserves, dividend payments to shareholders will be less. This will have the effect of reducing the income of the shareholders, and the consumption function will shift downwards. 7. Holding of liquid assets. The amount of liquid assets in the form of cash balances, savings, and government bonds in the hands of consumers also influence the consumption function. If people hold larger liquid assets, they will have a tendency to spend more out of their current income, and the propensity to consume will move upwards and vice versa. Piaget was of the view that with a cut in money wage, prices fall and the real value of such assets increases. This tends to shift the consumption function upward. This is called the Piaget effect. 8. The distribution of income in the community also determines the shape of the consumption function. If there are large disparities in income distribution between the rich and the poor, the consumption function is low because the rich have a low propensity to consume and the poor with very low income are unable to spend more on consumption. If through progressive taxation and other fiscal measures, the inequalities of income and wealth are reduced, the consumption function will shift upward because with the increase in the income of the poor, their consumption expenditure will increase more than the reduction in the expenditure of the rich. Moreover, if the distribution of income is significantly altered for political or humanitarian reasons, consumer habits themselves may undergo such changes as to cause the position or shape of the entire consumption function to vary perceptibly. 9. Attitude towards saving. The consumption function is also influenced by people's attitude towards saving. If they value future consumption more than present consumption, they will tend to save more and the consumption function will shift downward. This tendency may be reinforced by the state through compulsory life insurance, provident fund, and other social insurance schemes to keep the consumption function low. In a high saving economy, the consumption function is low. 10. Dusenberry hypothesis. James Dusenberry has propounded a relative income hypothesis affecting the consumption function. The first part of this hypothesis relates to the demonstration effect. There is a tendency in human beings not only to keep up with the Joneses, but also to surpass the Joneses. That is, the tendency is to strive constantly towards a higher consumption level and to emulate the consumption patterns of one's rich neighbors and even to surpass them. Thus, consumption preferences are independent. The second part is the past peak of income hypothesis, which explains the short-run fluctuations in consumption. Once the community reaches a particular income level and standard of living, it is reluctant to come down to a lower level of consumption during recession. Consumption is sustained by the reduction in current saving and vice versa. So there is no shift in the consumption function during the short run. There is simply an upward-downward movement on the same consumption function when income rises or falls during the short run. We may conclude with Professor Hansen that except for quite abnormal or revolutionary changes in certain objective factors, shifts in the propensity to consume out of a given income are not likely to be of more than secondary importance. Measures to raise the propensity to consume. The propensity to consume remains stable during the short run due to existence of certain psychological and institutional factors in the society. But employment can only increase pari passu with an increase in investment, unless indeed there is a change in the propensity to consume, as pointed out by Keynes. Therefore, it is significant to study the measures which tend to raise the propensity to consume. 1. Income redistribution. Redistribution of income in favor of the poor tends to raise the propensity to consume because the marginal propensity to consume of the low-income groups is high in comparison to the rich. Therefore, the propensity to consume can be raised by transferring income and wealth from the rich to the poor. This can be done by the state through its taxation and public spending policies. By imposing progressive taxes on incomes, expenditures, estates, capital gains, etc., the state is able to mobilize larger revenues for providing more facilities to the poor. But care should be taken that such taxation should not adversely affect investment. Secondly, the state can increase the income of the poor through a judicious public expenditure program. By starting public works, it is in a position to increase income by providing larger employment opportunities to the unemployed. The provision of free education, free midday meals, free health services, low rent housing, etc., indirectly help in increasing the income of the workers and tends to raise their consumption expenditure. Such social expenditures by the state also increase the efficiency of the workers, which in turn leads to a rise in their wages. Page 79. 2. Increased wages. If wages are raised, they will have a direct effect in shifting the consumption function upward. But a policy of high wages adversely affects the level of employment in the economy. For it is not possible to raise the marginal revenue productivity of labor in the short run. If wages are raised in such a situation, costs will rise in the absence of increase in the marginal revenue productivity of labor, and the economy is likely to experience underemployment. Therefore, the long-run wage policy should be such that wages increase pari passu with increase in labor productivity. This will tend to raise the level of consumption in the economy. 3. Social security measures. Social security measures tend to raise the consumption function in the long run. Provisions for unemployment relief, medical facilities, old age pension, etc., remove future uncertainties and the tendency to save is reduced on the part of the people. The state should therefore provide larger social security measures to raise the propensity to consume of the people. Unemployment relief and old age pensions tend to maintain a high consumption expenditure even during a depression and thus help bring revival in the economy. So social security measures tend to raise the consumption function both in periods of prosperity and depression. 4. Credit facilities. Cheap and easy credit facilities help in shifting the consumption function upwards. When loans are easily and cheaply available to the people, they buy more durable consumer goods like scooters, televisions, refrigerators, etc. This tends to raise the propensity to consume. To purchase these things on installment basis or on higher purchase system produces the same effect. Thus, credit facilities in various ways help raise the propensity to consume of durable consumer goods. 5. Advertisement. Advertisement is one of the most significant ways to raise the propensity to consume in modern times. Advertisement and propaganda through the various media of radio, television, cinema, newspaper, etc. make the consumers familiar with the uses of the products. Consumers are attracted towards them and they tend to buy them. This raises their propensity to consume. 6. Development of means of transport. Well-developed means of transport also tend to shift the consumption function upward. The movement of goods from the manufacturing centers to different parts of the country becomes easy. The size of the market expands. Prices may also fall due to the reduction of transport costs. Things are available to the people in their respective towns. All this has the tendency to raise the consumption function. 7. Urbanization. As a corollary to the above, urbanization helps raise the propensity to consume. When urbanization takes place, people move from the rural to urban areas. They are enamored by new articles and influenced by demonstration effect. This tends to shift the consumption function upwards. Thus, the state should follow the policy of deliberate urbanization for the purpose of raising the consumption function. Selected readings. J.M. Keynes, The General Theory of Employment, Interest and Money, 1936, Chapter 8 and 9. G. Ackley, Macroeconomic Theory, 1961, Chapter 10. F. S. Brueman, Macroeconomics, 4th edition, 1970, Chapter 5. T. F. Dernberg and D. M. McDougall, Macroeconomics, 5th edition, 1976, Chapter 4. Exercises. Question 1. Explain the concept of propensity to consume and show how it occupies a strategic position in the theory of employment. 2. Explain Keynes' psychological law and discuss its implications. 3. What do you mean by consumption function? Explain the factors influencing consumption function. 4. Keynes' discovery of the consumption function must be regarded as one of the major breakthroughs of modern economics. Discuss. 5. Keynes' consumption function is an epoch-making tool in economic analysis. Discuss. And 6. Keynes' consumption function is an epoch-making contribution to the tools of economic analysis. Discuss the statement and bring out the importance of consumption function in macroeconomic analysis. With this, we come to the end of Chapter 9.